He was a man of vision, a vision of serving others from a very early age. Born in France in 1799, he was ordained a priest at the age of 22, became a teacher at the diocesan seminary, and helped rebuild a society devastated by years of civil war. Under his guidance, he formed what has come to be known as the Association of Holy Cross, which made its way into the U.S. in 1841 and has made an impact on American society in a number of ways. On September 15th, Father Basil Anthony Moreau will become Blessed Basil in a beatification ceremony conducted by Pope Benedict XVI. Hello and welcome to Catholic Bookmarks. I'm Frank Murrock. The association spearheaded by Father Moreau is the Fathers, Brothers, and Sisters of Holy Cross. Most are known as educators. Americans are very well acquainted with the order's most prominent school, Notre Dame University. Today on our program, we're going to talk with Brother Joel Gialanza, who has touched up a biography on Father Basil written some 45 years ago. He'll be with us to talk about this very special man. Later in the program, we're going to take a look at two books. One, a new one, which serves as a guide for a seven-day retreat in which St. Joan of Arc is your retreat master. We'll talk with Barbara Beckwith, author of the book, which blends spirituality and the history of this teenager who left such an impression on the world. Also on the program, I'm going to revisit an interview I had with Regina Doman, author of Angel in the Waters, an illustrated book about babies in the womb accompanied by their angel. You'll meet all three authors today on Catholic Bookmarks. On September 15th, 2007, Basil Anthony Moreau will be beatified by Pope Benedict XVI in a ceremony in Le Mans, France. The beatification has been a long process of stops and starts, but finally it gained momentum in the mid-1990s. The late Pope John Paul II bestowed the title of Venerable on Moreau in 2003, and 2 years later, the Congregation for the Causes of Saints recommended to Pope Benedict that Basil Moreau be declared blessed. In the past few months on our program, we have discussed several interesting people in church history who have made a difference by hearing God's call to action and following that call, oftentimes having to overcome personal difficulty and even jealousy from contemporaries. Father Basil's story is similar. In 1962, a book was written on his life. The book has been re-released at this time by Ave Maria Press. The title of the book is simply Basil Moreau. Joining us now to talk about the book and this impressive man, founder of the Priests, Brothers, and Sisters of Holy Cross, is Brother Joel Gialanza, a Holy Cross brother. Brother Joel, nice to have you with us.
Thank you. It's very good to be here.
This must be an exciting time for the Holy Cross family, with Father Basil being so close to beatification.
Actually, it is, because as you just mentioned, it's been a long journey. And I think we even went through periods, not where people lost interest, but where people thought, well, this is never going to come to be. And then, as you also indicated, it came to be, in one sense, so rapidly, just since, you're right, about the 1990s, it came to be so rapidly that I think there's a sense where we're still recovering, because it's like, oh, this is really going to happen. This is exciting.
I mentioned at the beginning of the program about Holy Cross, but for our listeners who may be just joining us now or who may want to know a little more, Holy Cross is quite famous because it's had a number of interesting, remarkable achievements in this country. So what would be the most prominent that people would be familiar with?
Probably, I think, anyway, that usually it's interesting when people ask me myself, you know, when they simply say, oh, you remember the Congregation of Holy Cross, and what do you do? And I'll mention, of course, from the beginning we were involved in education. In this country, I believe, anyway, there's no question that people would immediately think of the University of Notre Dame. But that's one of several universities going from east to west that we're involved in. In a country like Canada, I think, interestingly enough, people would immediately think of the Oratory of St. Joseph, where Blessed Brother Andre lived and did most of his ministry. So it's very interesting that just you have these two places in these two adjacent countries. One is educational and one is very pastoral and a spiritual center. But in this country, I think it would be the University of Notre Dame. But depending upon where you are, here in where I live, it would be St. Edward's University in Austin, Texas. People might think of that first. Not that they wouldn't know of Notre Dame, but they would just happen to know the Holy Cross people who are here in Central Texas. first of all.
And then there is also, excuse me for interrupting, there is also a Holy Cross presence, and it's been there for at least 50 years, in Hollywood.
There is, yes. The whole reality of, I mean, it would trace its roots back to Father Patrick Peyton, and of course his cause has been introduced now also. And just the whole dedication to family prayer, family rosary, but it became much broader. And the vision was to communicate ways of faith, communicate the faith through a variety of media. And that's part of where family theater came to be born. And you're right, it is centered in Hollywood and still does wonderful work. And again, if you're in that area, people might think of that as being associated with Holy Cross before they might think of another particular institution.
If you just joined us, we are talking to Brother Joel Gialanza, Holy Cross brother, and we're going to get back to it, Basil Moreau, who will be beatified September 15th, 2007. What makes Basil, Father Basil, soon to be blessed Basil, a unique man in your view?
I would say immediately two things, and I believe these very strongly, and I also believe they're things that are needed for our world. First of all, his unswerving conviction that God is present and active in our world. And I put a period behind that statement, because he would. Meaning, we can't add, well, if this happens, or when this takes place, God is present and active all of the time. I think as a people, just as humans, because we read the morning newspaper, we watch the evening news, I think you can easily, in these days, come away from that discouraged about humanity itself. And are we still good? Well, Father Moreau was convinced of it. So I find his message very, very contemporary. And the second point I would just mention briefly is Father Moreau was convinced, and it's no different than the gospel, so I can't pretend it's new, of the power of the cross to transform us. So suffering and difficulties and setbacks, all of these things, in one sense, never really surprised him. Because his response would be, how can we be surprised? This is what Jesus went through. And if we say we follow Jesus, then we're going to run into the same reality. So for him, the cross, was just a sign that God was at work. That it shouldn't surprise us when difficulties come. Which is why the motto of the congregation, in Latin it's Spes Unica, which means in the cross is our only hope. We hope in the cross because if we depend on ourselves, it's not really going to get us anywhere. So we have to hope in the reality of the cross as the primary means of transformation. I think those two realities, the conviction that God is present and active in our world all of the time, regardless of circumstances, he called that providence, and the reality that the cross is a primary means of our transformation because it is what Jesus left to us. I think those are very contemporary realities and have a great deal to say to our world today. I know I needed it, just a personal note, I needed it with my family who are still living in New Orleans in the midst of Katrina. Maybe I didn't always refer to Moreau, but just to be able to tell them that, no, God does not hate you, God has not abandoned you because of this awful natural disaster. It simply is the reality. The challenge becomes what our faith does with it so we can continue living.
He came from a very large family, but also a relatively poor family, did he not? And he was ordained a priest at a very early age, 22.
He did. He's the ninth of 14 children, and I would say at least the how would I describe the family? Probably as modest. His father, you know, was a wine merchant, and his mother ran the family farm. So they most certainly, not enormous means, but they most certainly would have had the means to take care of themselves. When it came to his initial education, that was a challenge. But because he was bright, a challenge for the family financially. Because he was bright, he had several people who were willing to support him. And he's ordained, yes, when he's 22 years old, in 1821. And then from there, I mean, it's evident the man was a scholar, the man was insightful, the man was sensitive to what was going on in his world. And to be living in the wake of the French Revolution, in a sense, maybe it's like with people in different parts of the world who struggle with various crises they're dealing with. All they have to do is look out the window, and they're going, the needs are enormous. Where do we begin? So for Basil Moreau, he just tried to begin, you know, in addressing the needs of children who weren't being educated. He was very concerned that the whole future of French society was at stake because the parochial, the school system, the educational system had collapsed for all practical purposes. People, and he wanted to see that people had access to the sacraments. So the needs were there. It wasn't hard to discover what to do. Mm-hmm. It was bringing together the people to do it.
He, as I mentioned at the beginning, people like him who became leaders, not seeking it, but he became a leader, excuse me, faced challenges from inside, and there were even some jealousy. Did he experience any of that?
Oh, I think very much so, because he was successful. I don't want to be, you know, in the position of judging other people who actually were very significant and very important in Holy Cross history. But there most certainly was a sense in which it was almost astounding what this man built and what he had accomplished and how well he came to be known, at least in that part of France, but also in Paris, because government officials, you know, he would bug them whenever he needed something, and he was constantly trying to get them to see what he needed in order to advance the projects, especially educational projects that he was working on. And there were other members, even, I have to admit, of the congregation who saw that success and became envious of it. And as we move through the history of his administration anyway, that tension only increases. And I think it has a lot to do with jealousy, but also simply misunderstanding, not understanding what is his vision, where is he going with this. So in one sense, part of it may have been objective, of saying, I wonder what Father Moreau is doing. The other part of it, I think, was in fact, no one can read the heart of those people, but some of it was in fact, oh, I wish I could get that kind of notoriety and my school would be this famous, or my work would be so well known. And in the end, he suffered for that. And I'm not sure I will take back what I was just going to say. I am sure it didn't surprise him, because he says it didn't. He says, trials don't surprise me. That didn't make them easier or always welcome, but it didn't surprise him.
Is it not a little strange that he is being beatified after two other people in the order have been beatified?
Actually, you know, that's an excellent question, because it came up on several instances. You mentioned it in your introduction. I don't really think all of the engine got going and everything converged in just the way it needed to converge until maybe beginning in the late 80s and most certainly through the 90s, when we realized this could move forward now. Just a quick comment. You go to Canada with Brother André, Blessed Brother André Bessette. It's a very different reality. Brother André is well known in Canada. Long before he was beatified, there was a cult, and I mean that in the liturgical sense. There was a cult surrounding him. People prayed to him. People knew him. My goodness, people wanted to be related to him. We had more calls about people saying, oh, I'm Brother André's fourth cousin, fifth removed. He was known. That wasn't true of Basil Moreau. I think that's coming more now. Now, people, there is a hunger to say, well, let me read his writings. Let me read his life. Let me read what he did. So for me, no. The very fact that both Mother Leonie and Brother André, it's a matter of their times. They were just better known. And what really needs to develop, I think, around any saint, any blessed, is, as the Church would call it, a cult of prayer, of especially praying for intercession, for healing, for miracles, for support, for insight, all of those things. And I really believe maybe that's been all along with Basil Moreau, but it's been quiet. Now maybe we're beginning to see the beginning of sort of the explosion, hopefully, because it will be very important to develop, not only just in his town of Le Mans, France, but I think across the congregation, something of that cult.
We have been talking to Brother Joel Giolanza, Holy Cross Brother. The name of the book is Basil Moreau. It's reprinted by Ave Maria Press. You can get it at their website. That's www.avemariapress.com. And again, the name of the book, Basil Moreau. Brother Joel, thank you very much for giving us time to talk about this.
Thank you so much. This has been a great privilege. Anytime I have the chance to talk about Basil Moreau, it's quite energizing, so I truly do appreciate it.
All right. Well, I hope people go out and buy the book and learn more about this interesting man.
Thank you so much.
As we mentioned, Father Moreau was born in France. Coming up, a talk with an author who has written a retreat guide centered around another French Catholic, St. Joan of Arc. A talk with Barbara Beckwith when Catholic Bookmarks returns.
We asked people all over America, what have you done for your marriage today?
It's a good question. I gave a huge hug this morning.
We've actually organized a date night tonight.
I took the baby while she worked.
I sent my husband a love email.
I've carried my wife's purse.
I shopped.
We talked.
I made my wife laugh. She's still laughing.
What have you done for your marriage today? Do something a little special. Get started at foryourmarriage.org, a message from the Catholic Communication Campaign.
It's not hard to find people in need. They're everywhere. And there's more than one kind of disaster that affects people's lives. There's AIDS and the millions of orphans the disease has left behind. There are teeming refugee camps, the result of war and persecution. Mary Knoll has been reaching out to the world's needy for nearly a century. Mary Knoll is there right now, in 40 countries around the world. And with your help, Mary Knoll will be there tomorrow. Call us at 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARY-KNOLL. Or, for more information, go to www.mygiftcounts.org. One world, one mission, Mary Knoll.
From time to time in the program, we feature books that can help you if you are planning on making a personal retreat or just interested in something spiritual to read from time to time during the day. There's a new book out that you might be interested in because it focuses on one of the more interesting saints, a teenager who led an army during a violent period of history. At the time, many people believed she was a chosen one of God, while others say she was crazy with her statements of hearing the voices of three saints. Barbara Beckwith, managing editor of St. Anthony Messenger magazine, has written a book that serves as a seven-day retreat with St. Joan of Arc, the retreat master. In an interview with Beckwith, I mention how unique the concept is.
Well, actually, it's not unique to us. St. Anthony Messenger Press has had a whole series of books, A Retreat with a Different Saint, looking at their lives in such a way as to get kind of main points that they would say to people as their retreat director might.
Most people, when they think of Joan of Arc, will revert to a movie that they may have seen about her. She's pictured as a young, attractive woman who is leading an army of men and quite an effective leader. What do we know about her? How much of that is Hollywood?
She was young. She was only 19 when she died, 17 when she began gathering her army. She was fiery. I think she had a personality that, you know, drew others to her.
I made mention of this. You make mention of it, too, in the first pages of the book. She lived in a very tumultuous, violent century. The fact that she hit a stride at 17, as you said, she died at 19. What does that tell us about the people at the time? Were they looking for a savior?
Well, after nearly about 80 years of war, wouldn't you? I mean, we think that the Vietnam War dragged on, and we're certainly all looking at the war with Iraq and saying, when will it end? Imagine if that had gone 80 years. She lived in a borderland, too, where her area could see people from either side claiming lands. So it was very tumultuous for her. And yes, they were looking for a savior, someone to lead them, some fresh inspiration.
You heard me begin by saying, was she a chosen one of God or was she crazy? She heard voices. Was she delusional? What is history?
This is a very critical question, the Jones story. I think she heard voices. But what makes her as crazy as hearing voices is the fanaticism with which she carried out what they told her. She was single-minded in doing what she heard her three saints advising her.
Her life was short, as we've talked about, and so much of it, the movies and everything else, center on the trial that took place. And it's compelling. We go back to the television series, I think, that a lot of people may have seen with Lili Sobieski, portraying her about 6-7 years ago. And that really captivated. Was it not captivating, the way it was portrayed?
Oh, it was excellent.
Can you talk about that trial a little bit? What was she on trial for?
Well, they started out with like 72 charges against her. They ended up condemning her on only one charge, that she was not submissive to the church militant. And that was because she would not return to wearing women's clothes, as the church was ordering her to. She was charged of heresy. She was charged of witchcraft. Her answers deflected all of that. The reason the trial figures so prominently in all these stories is that that's what we have the written record of. The transcripts are preserved.
Mm-hmm. Was she a victim? And you say, you note that she was a victim of the Great Schism in the Church.
Yes. She twice tried to appeal to the Pope, and he didn't want to get involved. And that one time, I'm sure that the message was not conveyed to him at all.
Beckwith's book, Joan of Arc, A Seven-Day Retreat, blends spirituality with the facts of history and is an interesting read in addition to being a guide for a personal retreat. The book is published by St. Anthony Messenger Press and available on its website at www.americancatholic.org. Not too long ago, we featured an author on the program who wrote a book titled Angel in the Waters. It's an illustrated work about a baby in its mother's womb and the presence of an angel also in the womb. The book is published by Sophia Institute Press and is available in both English and Spanish. The book is the work of author Regina Dolman and illustrator Ben Hatke. One reviewer said if a child is given this book, he or she will be pro-life forever. In an interview with Dolman, I asked how the book came about.
I wrote the book when I was expecting my first child, my son. But actually the idea for the book came a little sooner than that. I'm the oldest of 10 children, and my youngest sister was born when I was 21. And when she was born, she learned to talk quite early. And my sister, who was in college at the time, was studying early childhood education. And she read someplace that children who learn to talk early can sometimes remember life in the womb. So next time she went home on her college break, she sat down and she said to Anna, "Do you remember being in Mommy's tummy?" And Anna said, "Yes." And she said, "Well, what was it like?" And Anna kind of looked thoughtful, and then she said, "It was warm and dark, and there was an angel there." And that story just blew us away, you know, when my sister told us all that. And it kind of was the first insight to me that for a baby that's in the womb, that, like, we tend to think of life as starting, you know, when the baby is born, and the baby in the womb is just kind of hanging around waiting to be born. And it kind of just opened my eyes to say, you know, it's probably really not like that. Like, the child probably already has a life, you know, as far as the baby is concerned, you know. It's in the womb, it's in this place where it can swim, it can explore, and, you know, and there's all these sounds coming from the outside. And so the entry into new life, into, you know, being born, is something that can be almost traumatic, you know, and definitely a very big change. And so the idea from my sister, you know, of the fact that, at least in Anna's womb, that there was a guardian angel there with her, there was an angel there, I began to, you know, kind of visualize this book as being, you know, an unborn baby talking with the angel that was in the waters with him, in the waters of the womb.
Who is the book aimed at?
Oh, it's a children's book. I was kind of picturing it as a book that a family might get when they were expecting their second or third or, you know, third or fourth or ongoing child, that they would get to share with the children that they already had. You know, just like basically because children are always curious when mom is pregnant, you know, like what's going on in there. And this might be a gentle way of introducing to them, you know, to the baby in the womb.
Explain the process now. You came up with the concept. You start putting the words together. But this book has pictures, and the pictures are just as telling in many ways as the words are. So talk about the illustrator aspect.
Well, the illustrator is a friend of mine. I think he did a fantastic job with the illustrations. I knew right from the beginning that this was going to be a book where that really depended a lot on the illustrations. Like, I do some illustration work myself in a non-professional way. I knew I could not illustrate this book. I needed someone who, you know, was really capable of showing the beauty of, you know, the beauty of the human person in the womb. And I was very happy to work with Ben Hatke, who's a neighbor of mine in Front Royal. I think he did a fantastic job. Ben and I sat down together with my text, and, you know, we basically worked up a mock-up of the book. I kind of said, well, I think, you know, the baby should look like this here and like this here and things like that. And Ben kind of took that, but he really ran with it. I mean, some of my concept art is very different from what he came up with. I think what he's come up with is much better, you know, far superior. I'm very pleased with how it came out.
The book has done very well. Now, Sophia Institute Press is making it available online in both English and Spanish. You can read it and see the illustrations. The website, www.sophiainstitute.com. The publisher believes strongly in the message and feels if you like what you see, you may want to purchase the book as a gift. The web address again, www.sophiainstitute.com. The name of the book, Angel in the Waters, by Regina Doman. And that's spelled D-O-M-A-N. And speaking of websites, you might be interested in checking out Regina's website. She has authored several other books for teenagers and is working on a new series now called the John Paul II series. You can get more information on her website at www.reginadoman.com. Well, that concludes our program for this week. My thanks to Brother Joel Gialonzo, Barbara Beckwith, and Regina Doman for sharing their time with us, and to you for sharing yours. A reminder, you can find this program and our past programs archived on the U.S. Bishops Conference website. The web address is www.uscb.org/ccc. There you can listen to our programs and other programs sponsored by the Bishops Conference. You can also download the podcast at that site and listen to it at your leisure. Catholic Bookmarks is brought to you by the Catholic Communication Campaign. I'm Frank Maroc. Our technical director is Mark Height. Our Bookmarks theme is composed and performed by Joe DeSanctis. Until next week, may this coming week be filled with words to soothe your soul.